Outgoing New Jersey Governor Chris Christie guest hosted Afternoon Drive on WFAN Sports Radio in New York yesterday. Just think about that. A year ago, he was angling to be a heartbeat away from the presidency, and now his best hope for his next job is to replace Mike and the Mad Dog. The Trump Report starts now!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Good evening, everybody. It's Christian Blatt here on The Trump Report. At ChristianDMZ is where you can find me. We have a full house tonight. Next to me, the one, the only, Drexel Hurd, at Drexel Hurd.
Hello.
And for those watching on YouTube, he has the smart glasses on.
I do have my Rick Perry glasses on.
Yes, you do have your Rick Perry glasses on. I'm intimidated, I'm not going to lie. I'm always intimidated, but also always intimidated by the one, the only, Chelsea Galicia.
Hi.
No glasses, but I'm still intimidated.
Perfect vision.
Yeah, if you had glasses, it would probably hurt more. I'm not intimidated by Scott Moore.
No
You're
one
not
is.
The one, the only either. There's many of you.
There are
I know
a lot
because
of,
I'm trying to tag you on Instagram and Facebook. There's a lot of Scott
We're everywhere.
Moore's. But you're the only one that we want on the show. However, we do also have a special guest, Buddy Sostand. Tell me I said it right, Buddy.
You said it right, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
That was pretty good.
And he is at Buddy Sostand, but it's Sosthand. Yes. That's on Twitter. And BuddySostand.com. Or no, it's Buddy.Sostand.com, unless I'm mistaken.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So the dot between Buddy and Sostand on the .com.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure everybody can find everything.
Yeah.
And we're going to start because, obviously, it would be rude to not start with our guest. Buddy, you are an award-winning stuntman.
Sir.
Who's appeared in films such as The Expendables, The Amazing Spider-Man, and Captain America Civil War. So I have seen your work, just didn't realize it.
Right.
When you're doing Amazing Spider-Man and Captain America Civil War, just please tell me you were a stunt double for Spider-Man.
Negative.
Okay. I didn't think so, but I was just hoping because he was in both of those movies.
Right.
And I was like, all right, you know, just depended on whether or not I was going to ask for an autograph. But I'll get a selfie.
No
anyway.
Autograph now?
Well,
so
I'll get a selfie, though.
That's, wow.
Yeah, it's more the...
So just leave now, Christian.
No, because I have a trunk full of Spider-Man DVDs. So now I don't know. So when you're in a movie like that, it's just stunts for various cast members, or are you specifically assigned to someone in particular?
Well, it depends. So I would say for Spider-Man, I actually had what we consider stunt acting roles.
Okay.
So I engaged in a fight scene with, amongst other stunt colleagues of mine, with what's his name? Andrew Garfield. Is Andrew? Yeah.
Well, if it's the Amazing Spider-Man, yes, it is indeed Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. Because
the OG Spider-Man, that was Tobey Maguire.
So many, and there's a new reboot.
And now it's Tom Holland.
Yeah, Tom
it's
Holland.
Look, it's hard to keep the Spider-Man straight.
Exactly. Yeah. So those had to think about it, right? It's been a couple of years. But so certain times, because we did close quarters combat fight scene with him in a subway car. So oftentimes, you know, they will put us together with, like, the actor and stunt performers around him who have a little bit of acting chops.
Sure.
Who can actually just stand there and not, you know, to look natural.
Look natural, not like...
And fight the actor and not hurt him. So,
well, that's probably the most important part.
That's the most important
because thing. Obviously this is not something you were involved with, but we all heard about how during the filming of Star Wars Force Awakens, Harrison Ford was hurt a lot. And I think he's still got pain from it. And so that obviously is very important that, you know, that's not something that would have been someone like your fault, but it's also everybody needs to make sure that this stunt goes the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. And I mean, but there's obviously a fine line because, you know, when you're putting, you also do stunt coordination. So you also want to use your talent as much as possible. So you want to, you know, sometimes you want to, as I say, ride the edge, but not go over the edge. So sometimes you're going to get bumps and bruises, which we hope for, but every once in a while you might get a what we call an owie.
I believe that's a technical term. That's what the on-set doctor probably says. One other thing that I want to ask you about in terms of your work, you've doubled for both Sam Jackson and Dr. Dre. I'd like to know when and where you did those.
Okay, so the one time I was fortunate enough to double Mr. Jackson, because a friend of mine is a normal double, was on a movie called Lakeview Terrace.
Okay, so not Snakes on a Plane. But
I'm
going to keep listening. Anyway. I'm still interested.
I'm disappointing you today is what it sounds
no,
like.
No, that's all right.
Should I leave?
You know, only one black person in the room at a time.
Did you like the show Grimm? I doubled the guy on Grimm. Did you like Grimm?
I know that show, but it's...
I'm trying.
Look, I saw Lakeview Terrace, though, so I saw that. And Dr. Dre, was it...
Well, Dr. Dre, I've done a couple music videos where I've doubled him driving one of his luxury cars.
Oh, very. Hey. Never. All right, that sounds pretty good.
Yes.
That sounds like something where it's a lot less likely to get hurt.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we love having you here. Great conversationalist. Great to know about your background. Now, the reason why you would be on the Trump Report is because you're also the co-host of the Great American Podcast. And talk a little bit about that. How you're conservative, but you work very hard to produce a nonpartisan podcast.
Well, okay, so the Great American Podcast would be the umbrella, and the name of our show is On the Porch.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so, but the Great American Podcast is how you find us on Facebook. That's how you find us on
GreatAmericanPodcast.us, I believe, as well.
Look at you.
Yeah. Oh, I did my research.
I really should leave.
We'll talk about you. I'll pretend. I was like, oh, yeah, he was Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah,
and
totally
he was
wrong.
Spider-Man in every Spider-Man movie. Was
not
awesome.
Every Spider-Man, no.
just amazing.
One
yeah.
of the many. So basically, my partner, who's an actor, his name is John Pierocello, and he and I often have political discourse, let's just say. And he was on a podcast a year ago and invited me on. And, you know, I had some different points of views on things, and some of the hosts didn't really take too kindly to it. And so for about a month after I left, it was kind of like name-calling, bad names.
So
like
they were
that.
Still talking about you after
yes.
you had left.
Yes, because I had a different perspective. So to me, that was shocking because I said, well, what happened to the – and I'm not like we are the world cat. I understand people have different points of views, and people are going to be adamant and emphatic about their perspectives. But I've always thought it was weird that it becomes a personal attack and where people want to destroy you because you have a different point of view. That you may see the world from a different axiom than I do. So John and I often have these type of discussions, but they're always kind of funny. So I said, dude, why don't we have our own podcast? And I said, so the idea would be, we say Healing America one conversation at a time. So we have people from the left on our show. We have people from the right on our show. We have people talking about being domestic. Possessed by demons on
Whoa.
The show. You know
All
what
right.
I mean? So, you know, so
now
it's
that
just.
That is not something we've had on the show, but yet. You know,
now, granted, he was a comedian.
Unless anybody on the panel has something
we
that they'd like
have
to
have the EPA guy on.
That's true.
Right,
we,
true.
We could have some
possession. There's still time.
And, you know, we used to have, we used to do the election show, Trump versus Hillary, with Stephen. And I don't know, he may have been possessed by a demon at some point.
Right.
I'm not sure.
but the porch idea,
yeah.
So I really didn't explain, I'll get that fast. The porch idea was where I come from in Texas, you know, we would just all hang out on the porch and people just talk. And especially in my family, we would have the very, some very intense political discussions where you thought people were going to leave the porch and get in the front yard, go to the front yard.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the idea is to say, well, the idea is to not leave the porch and go to the front yard and, you know, get them up. And so that's where we came up with this concept of people just hanging out and talking. So that's the theme. It's like just on the porch. Who's going to come by and sit on our porch today and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about, and we can disagree and be cool. Hopefully we can have a little beer or some tea afterwards and keep it moving.
Well, look, I mean, that is what there's certainly not enough of as people talk about politics, and as this show has gone along, just the world has gotten much more divisive. People are much more dug in. I feel like if you go back 4, 8, 12 years, it was probably a lot easier for people to be like, okay, we'll try and listen to the other side. But now both sides are very angry at one another for various reasons, and both feel rightly so. It's what we try to do here, but it's very hard to get conservative voices onto that couch, so we always do appreciate it. Now, like I said, you're a conservative, but you try to have the show be nonpartisan. We try to have this show be nonpartisan, but it never really works out that way, as the people in the chat will attest to.
I'm a conservative.
By the way,
yes, you are.
You were conservative at one point, actually.
No, this is... everybody went right and Drexel went straight.
Yeah.
That's how he ended up a Democrat.
Right.
Wait a minute. Drexel, you went straight? Should we tell your fiance?
I don't know.
By the way, Jimbo, if you could put the chat up on the big screen, that would be fantastic. Because Drexel has it on his phone, so he has the insight on the chat.
I do.
And I don't. But so there'll be a lot of things we want to talk about. And, you know, I know I used to produce Dennis Miller's radio show, which is something you might not know about me.
I did research like yourself.
And yeah, but I'm not Dennis Miller, so you see, you were able to be disappointed. So you see,
I didn't say I was a fan of Dennis Miller. I just said I did my research on the show that I was going to be a guest on.
He has a lot more Emmys than I do, than my zero. But so as a result of that show, I have a lot of friends who are conservative, libertarian, all across the political spectrum. And what I find is it's very, a lot of them are, I'm a conservative, but many of them immediately make the point, but I don't like Trump. And then those that do feel like, I'm going to try to not say that unless I have to sometimes, you know, because it's such a divisive thing. It's, you know, this is obviously people were opposed to President Obama, but, you know, in recent memory, in my lifetime for sure, nothing's ever been more divisive than this. I mean, I certainly, I'm old enough that I remember the way that people would talk about Reagan and they weren't happy with him and the area of New York that I grew up in. But at the same time, they still couldn't help but like him. And then with Trump, it's very hard to find people that are like, you know, I don't like this or that about him, but let me try and give him a fair shake. So as a conservative, I'm not even asking you what you think about Trump. You're certainly more than welcome to say. But do you find that if somebody hears conservative, they immediately think like, oh, you think everything that Trump says is great?
Well, you know what? I think I wouldn't want to make a generalization of what somebody would say just based sure. on who they think you are. And I think one of the things that I would say that kind of gets missed in the political discourse is our education. I think we have always been divided, right? I mean, I think we had a civil war, right? We had a revolutionary war. So I think it's within the, we are all citizens of American democracy. So I'm not really offended by someone, whether they be conservative or a liberal, who does not like the president. I still feel that America still needs to be first. So I want to fight, would rather fight for that. I personally, how can I tell people? There's the phenomenon of Trump, and then there's the man. And the phenomenon is something that I did vote for. Now, granted, I always talk to my friends who are never Trumpers, and I have a lot of them. Come on, buddy, how could you do it? And I say, well, just based on my principles, the things that he supports, he's closer to my principles. No one on the left is going to be closer to my principles.
Ooh, I
want to
hear what the principles are. Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, just, you know, liberty, lower taxes, defense, you know, I'm not for, like, socialism. I'm not for the big government programs that I believe fulfill black people specifically. So I always say that black empowerment, I think, comes from the fact that we have a lot of issues within the black community that should be addressed by the community and not being a part of the nanny state. So
nanny state?
Yeah. So the dependency. So the point of depending on things other than, you know, let's say God, family, and country. So once again, those are specifics that we could probably do an hour on each one, God, family, and country. But I think in this discourse, what is being missed is I'm fine with people hating Trump. I'm fine with people, you know, when I say fine, like, if that's your perspective, man, I'm not one to try to change that perspective if that's how you see the world. But the question is, if I disagree with you, you disagree with me, does it have to be a personal attack? So that's where you're bringing up a very good point, is it's become a personal attack for people on either side. Even during the Obama administration, it was like if Obama said the sky was blue, people like, no, it's green. You know what I'm saying? So I think this political discourse, it might be a continuation, and I've said this on our podcast, of, I'd say, the prosperity of our country. And I think prosperity has kind of a little spoiled. And now with social media, we can communicate a lot easier. An idea, or we can communicate a thought or a reaction, right? I'm pissed, and how could he do that? And then that becomes something that goes viral, and you create
viral. Can also go viral.
And the thread goes on and on and on and on and on. And I'll never forget, to use a perfect example, was once someone had made the comment, and they said, all Republicans are racist. And I said, well, that can't be true. And I said, I would not even say Democrats are racist, knowing that the KKK party was started by the Democratic Party. That's all I said, right? I was like, so let's get rid of the racism talk and let's talk.
We were talking about education,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
This is where education is probably mm-hmm. helpful, right? Because
history is probably
history,
helpful.
Yeah.
And education after that.
Because we know that the parties have switched.
Negative. They have not switched. Because if you're saying that all Republicans are racist.
No, we're not saying that. We're not saying that.
The KKK was started by the Democrats.
They were.
That is the current, that is the modern day Republican Party.
Right. No, so this is where I disagree with you, Jackson. If you say the modern day Republican Party, see what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. That's a generalization that I disagree with.
We're talking leadership through leadership and through legislation.
No, that's negative. Because the problem is that you have people who are Republican senators and congressmen who are elected to office as Republicans. So you're saying the Republican platform. If you're saying maybe if there are racist Republican voters or racist Democratic voters, that's a more... But you can't say a party, a whole party.
Yes, it has. In the history of time, I'm pretty sure I passed the AP exam in American
AP
history.
I did too. Yeah. If you truly believe, AP government, respect, but if you believe, I just want you to listen to what you're saying.
But there's a difference.
A whole party. I'm saying the people who are Hispanic.
We're not
Omar
saying the
Navarro,
whole party, though. We're not saying the whole party. We're
she
saying
said the party switched.
No, we're saying the
The platform,
the platform, and the principles have shifted throughout
the
time period.
Explain to me what the platform, the racist platform, would be like. You know how Hamas has in their chapter.
We're not talking about the racist platform. We're talking about
the whole entire thing has switched through.
I don't. But you have to give an example. Like what makes a whole. What I'm disagreeing with is that you're saying, like, I would. That's what I'm saying. The point I was trying to tell you, like, so when I went back to the Democratic, when I put the thread up, I was saying that I do not believe that the Democratic people who are Democrats today are racist. But I'm saying is to say that, okay, the KKK was started by the Democratic Party.
In name only.
Huh?
Right.
In
that's what I'm saying. You're, put, you're,
no,
you're talking
got,
history
you got,
versus
I think
what's
you're
today.
My larger point about political discourse.
But there's some specific
no, but,
facts within the larger
right.
picture
right,
that we want to
But you have not given me a fact
about.
To talk,
on,
you talk about
so,
the switch in the platform.
So
there's no
so,
proof of that.
So there is proof
there,
of that.
There is.
Okay, Justin, give me an example.
Well, Drexel go, and then
and how legislation has been put forth. So if you look at the, where the Democrats were in the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, and then you say what was the Democratic Party platform back in those days? And then you look at where the Democrats are now. And then you look at where the Republican Party was back in the 1920s. Basically, the Democrats of the 1920s are the Republicans of the 1980s and 90s. The Republicans of the 1990s are the Democrats of the 1920s. So it's all just in name only. But at the same time, we were just having this conversation about Richard Nixon.
Right.
At the same time, you look at the way the Republican legislation has...
Give me
gone
an example
the,
of a. Remember, you use the word racist now. You use
I,
the
no,
word
no,
no,
you
we're
use
not,
the word
no,
racist.
We're not saying
we
racist.
We just said that they.
She said they switched, and I'm saying, when you switched? I'm saying, what is your specific. When you say legislation, I'm saying you have to give me a specific legislation that
do you,
that perpetuates racism.
But it's not about racism.
We're not talking about racism. You just.
It's
hold
about
on.
The platform.
We're talking about the people, the voters. Like, to make it as simplified
okay.
as possible, let's go back to, like, the whole Southern vote in 64 when LBJ had run for re-election, and he did the platform there in 1964 for civil rights, and he knew that he was now going to lose the generation of those Southern Democrats that had always been Democrats.
The Dixiecrats.
All those people that had voted, he knew he was going to lose those people, and Richard Nixon accentuated that move in the Southern Democrats to be able to have those people shift over. And if you look, I'm just saying across the South, you can see throughout the South how all those once Democrats – have now switched to the Republican Party. And that goes in the elected leaders. That goes through the entire Southern Democrat voters have now shifted to the Republican, starting from the 60s and 70s, moving through to Reagan, and has accelerated to today.
You can also see that in the Truman Doctrine, too. Like right. That just that entire idea of Social Security, the entire – those were not the Democratic
no.
Party of the 1920s and before that. Those are not areas – where the Democratic Party would have been. From Truman on, basically, the Democratic Party was
right.
like, we are the party that is there to help people, which is where the Republican Party was before.
Right, and Republican Party used to be about the environment, high taxes, 90% tax rates during the Eisenhower years.
You got that in Nixon.
And then those people had high rates.
I want to give Buddy a chance to respond, and then we'll make sure we let Chelsea chime in before we move on to the news of the day.
Yes.
But I do want to
sorry,
finish
yeah,
I know we're
exactly.
done
no,
history.
Yeah.
This is what I'd like to keep doing if we had a
right, right,
show.
For 10 hours, right?
Because
well,
we
yeah,
don't, I want to let you finish up your thought, and we'll go back to Chelsea.
Yeah, well, I will say, like, I think, and it was funny because Dinesh D'Souza had a great movie, and he addressed those points about this switch that never happened, by the way. But I will say
okay.
this though. But the point I was actually trying to make that was
take
a larger
smart
point. Yeah,
I gotta put my
yeah. But no, seriously. But seriously, the larger point that I was actually trying to make was.
Wait, can I ask?
Hold on.
I want to hear what your point is that you're trying to make.
Yeah, the larger point. I was trying to use the thread because someone made the point that today they said my problem with. All the Republicans or the Republican Party is that they are all racist. I wanted to bring the idea and say, no, this is not a fact. So I was going to give them an example of parties who have actually contributed. Now, that does not mean, as I was saying to you earlier, Jexel, that there weren't people within the party who supported. They even had this group called the Lily White Republicans, right, who were Republicans, and who they called themselves the Lily White Republicans, who were more for white people and white issues.
The Republican
but
Party
the point
of 2017.
But the larger point that I was trying to make was, I'd say, in the political discourse, I'm saying that, like you were talking about being dug in, once we make that assumption, or that accusation, then automatically there's a fight to be started. I think you can have an actual argument about policy today. Absolutely. I think you have an actual argument today about issues, whether it be socialism, whether it be communism, whether it be capitalism. These are things that we can have, I think, these ideas, even when it comes to multiculturalism, even when it comes to welfare. So I was just trying to make the point that when we use these actions, this is why I started the show, I'd say it's not even worth, matter of fact, use the word conservative, right? I'd say, fine, that's my political belief. That's what I have registered. I'm registered as a conservative. But I'm saying if I come to Drexel or Chelsea or, I'm sorry,
Scott,
and I go, blah, I'm a conservative. Okay, so that automatically is going to elicit a certain response, and we obviously can't talk because, like you said, people are going to say, oh, you believe everything Trump says. That's a negative. So the point that I was simply trying to make was it is not worth just using these grandiose terminology when we're trying to have political discourse. I think it's most importantly to talk about the thing that's right in front of us today, what the issue would be, and then we can get further with that. You don't have to name it. That was the point that I was making.
So I'm yes. for staying, you know, recent. But then when you throw in comments like the KKK was started by the Democrats, now you're going back in time, and then we got to recap.
Right.
Well, but you missed my point, though. So I was saying you missed the reason why I brought that up. I was talking to you about a thread and how a thread can go. I was just making point about discourse, and then a thread went boom. That was my point.
But somebody's saying all Republicans are racist. That is either proven or unproven. By itself, you don't have to. Well, how can that be if the KKK was started by the Democrats? That is a logical fallacy. You would have failed the LSAT if you're trying to get into law school by using that reasoning. Just if the Democrats are racist, let's just say they are, that doesn't say anything about whether the Republicans are or aren't. Do you see what I'm saying?
No.
So they could potentially both be racist, just talking about theoretically, it's possible.
What happens, and the reason why, maybe, perhaps this is an offering of why you have seen that it gets more and more hostile among people, is because we tried to explain to you how we've seen the platform change, and the next thing that was said was, well, that didn't happen, and yada yada. So when you dismiss people, it's not that you're trying to see their perspective or understand, oh, you have a different perspective, is that you just straight knocked it out and invalidated it as if you know the answer and are the supreme knowing being. And that's why this discourse has gotten so nasty.
Negative.
Because we are not just looking at each other with different perspectives, we're saying, actually, your perspective is wrong. It is factually incorrect. And you can believe that, but if you want to just snap it down and say you're wrong, that's not going to help with a respectful and beneficial discourse.
Can I respond? Yeah. The point, I think, here's where I think we agree. I agree in the fact that the point about discourse has to start with, like you said, facts and truth. So what I'm saying is just like, I don't want to get into a banter between you and I, because that's something we can go over, and he's looking at me ready to move on. But I'm saying, in order to start the political discourse, I'm saying I was utilizing the thread analogy to show you that I just made a fact. Like you said, I knew that didn't stand up to logical fallacy, but someone had posted that. And I was trying to make the point saying that, why would you post something that is false like that in order to try to have a discourse? So whether you or I agree on the perspective of the platform's changing, I don't see anything in the platform, I think, when you say things have switched. I'm just saying I don't see that. I don't see where the platforms have switched. Because, by the way, I don't buy that the Democratic platform is racist. That was not my argument. The Democratic Party is not a racist party. Neither is the Republican Party. It is not a racist party.
But it's not
about... You know what I'm saying, Jack? So that's all I'm trying to say.
No, I don't know what you're saying. What I'm saying is that it doesn't need to be written in black and white, this party is racist. It doesn't, like, the Republican platform is not going to say it's racist. It's how legislation affects minority groups that makes it
racist. When you make it
racist,
really hard for people
voter
to
suppression
vote,
is racist.
And the right, voter
welfare reform is crazily not a black issue. It is mostly a white Southern issue.
But Drexel, but once again,
as to Chelsea's immigration. Point, once again, if we're going to talk about all of these issues, gerrymandering and voter suppression and all of these things, I'd say once again, that's where I start saying that becomes a matter, believe it or not, of perspective, because there have been people who've done studies on both sides who've talked about, well, yes, that they believe there is and there isn't. He used like voter suppression.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Drexel used the axiom that voter suppression has been put forth as a platform by the Republican Party.
I did not say that.
Platform.
We're talking about a platform.
We're going to let Buddy finish his thought, and we have to move on. We could continue to do this, but I do want to let you. I want to finish the thought. Yeah.
With love and respect, Drexel. Yeah. I was just saying that Chelsea and Drexel and people will, and not you guys, people. I'm just saying people often, and I'll say both sides, will oftentimes say, well, this is the platform. And I'm always trying to say, well, we have to be specific about what policy, what law, and what platform proves that the Republican Party's platform is racist. Like the platform.
Why does that matter?
Now you were just talking about words or whatever.
You guys are bringing it up. You guys are saying that the party's switching.
We said the people in the back have switched.
I'm just saying
people have moved from what you were saying, the Democratic Party and the founding of the KKK.
Those people have
switched to today, and I would say case in point is the gerrymandering law in Wisconsin and North Carolina that was struck down because it was considered voting suppression and racist. And
so
I'm saying
we're
not saying the whole party because that's not, nobody's saying every single person.
What they stand for when they say we're trying to protect the vote, it's a...
Who is they?
Dog.
Sorry.
Well, here's the point, I don't know if this is an exact conversation you would have on the Great American Podcast, which
absolutely
can be found at thegreatamericanpodcast.us, but you can certainly find many more conversations
like that.
And by the way, I would certainly be interested in continuing talking about this if it were a slow news week,
right.
But there are a few things I do want to get to. Way back at the beginning of the show, 20 plus minutes ago, we heard a song from Gorky Park, the well-known, hugely popular Russian glam metal band from the 80s, and the only reason why was, of course, hey, there was a lot of Russia in the news this week, and it starts off with President Trump getting to meet Putin face-to-face, unless you're a conspiracy theorist where you feel like they've probably hung out a bunch of times. But, Buddy, as our resident conservative and as our guest, what is your take on the relationship between President Trump and Vladimir Putin?
I mean, I don't really have a take. I don't know. I mean, it's just
it's more like your gut. It doesn't even have to be facts.
I mean, I guess I'd say if I were just to look at maybe what happened, the ceasefire being brokered in Syria was a good thing. That was probably something that was good. I mean, what beyond that? I mean, there's this ongoing. Investigation with apparent.
I love when Republicans pretend like it's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I'd say the ceasefire is probably for me the biggest news. If that holds because of the carnage that is going on, because
absolutely.
Of all the people
who
are fighting for Syria, there's so many people vying for a foothold there. So to focus on ISIS and to stop Assad from fighting, you know, the Free Syrian Army and bombing the Syrian people, which is probably well over 500,000 that we know about, I'd say that's a good thing.
I definitely agree that if there were to be a Syrian ceasefire that lasted for a long time, that would be great. Whoever brokered it, whoever caused it, that part doesn't even matter. It is an issue that we in America have largely turned, and I'm not talking about our elected officials, although you could make that case too, but in general, it's not something people talk about. What they talk about is sort of where I started, things like Russia. And I'll start with Scott, because I feel like you haven't gotten enough words in yet. We'll work our way down. Your thoughts when you see that President Trump sits down and he doesn't give like a big bear hug to Putin, you know, like a sweaty shirtless on top of a horseback kind of holding a shotgun hug, but you know, it wasn't that moment, but what is your just gut reaction?
I was like, he's finally meeting his boss face to face. They're having their annual job performance review.
Exactly.
It didn't go well. You know, so he's going to be
Donald,
cordial.
We really expected a lot more from you. There's a lot of room for growth. No raise this year, but, you know, let's revisit in 6 months.
Right, right. So, all you know, it's going to be that
which
kind of...
That's Scott's theory. I think it's very funny.
And true.
Well, you can say that. I think it's funny. I'm a big proponent of our friend Kevin Undergaard always says, comedy must rule. And in this moment, what are you going to do other than laugh at something like that? Chelsea, I'm wondering your thoughts on President Trump finally sitting down with Vladimir Putin.
Scott is the expert on history. And if that's what he said went down, I believe it.
Great. I'll move on to Drexel. My next question is actually to start with Chelsea. So,
See, now he's not going to start with me anymore. He learned his lesson already.
No, that was great. Please.
I have a feeling it's because it's the Chelsea question.
It is indeed. It's for a recovering attorney. Mm-hmm. And since you're our recovering attorney, it'll go to you next. But I do want to let Drexel weigh in.
I think, like Scott said, I think he went and met his maker.
His
maker.
Somebody. Like the kingmaker, I guess, king is maker, what you
president,
mean. Not
president maker. I do think that you could tell... What came out of that, because Buddy was talking about the ceasefire, one of the really crazy things that came out of that was obviously this idea that he could create a cyber terrorism unit with Russia. What you could tell through photos, through statements, through conversation, through what we saw on TV, was that the other heads of state kind of isolated him. And where all of the statements from the White House seemed to be about Russia. And seemed to be about what that relationship was going to be like. And it was like, you saw the photo, I'm sure everybody saw the photo of the president sitting at the table by himself, looking like he didn't have anywhere else to go. And then nobody wants to talk to him. All the people around him are like, let's do real things.
To be fair, it is difficult to actually notice a German woman giving someone a cold response to something because she is, in fact, a German woman, but is very chilling by Angela Merkel. Clearly, they're not going to play doubles on the tennis court anytime soon. Angela, although if they did, I would watch, by the way.
It's because Angela Merkel knows that she is, at this point, the leader of the free world right now.
Right.
And she is the woman on top right now, and she has the power to do it. You even saw the Polish, the wife of the Polish prime minister kind of like
right
zigzag her way around Donald Trump. So I think she said, whoop. She said, oh, no, I don't want to shake your hand. But you know, and Buddy brought up America First at the top of the episode. And it is a little, you know, I come from a military family. So to see that.
Much like Buddy, by the way. Both come from military
families. So to see that kind of reaction to the head of state of a country that, you know, I am super proud of every day, is a little, you know, George W. Bush was a little, was not very bright. However, the cold reaction, even though every other country knew that the United States was the one that started the Iraq War and they just had to follow, there was never we're not going to listen to the United States. Or we don't believe that we should be following. Even after the intelligence, even through re-election in 2004, there was never a moment where our allies were like, you know what, we're not going to listen to the United States. Even Tony Blair, people who were following George W. Bush around the place. You know, you look at Theresa May, who's probably closer to Donald Trump than probably anybody, and she's like, I don't know about this guy.
Well, the interesting point, though, to sort of go back to something that Buddy said, that's the issue sort of as the man versus the office. People who disagreed with George W. Bush still, for the most part, found him to be very likable.
Right.
You know?
Personable,
and
warm.
It's not that easy to find Donald Trump personable or warm. So maybe that was why he sat down with Putin, because also not personable or warm. In fact, I'm fairly sure Putin is cold-blooded. I have no proof of that, though. I'm just wondering. But
his maker, because he's a vampire.
I don't know if either of them had cast reflections, so I can't.
I watched the interview with a vampire. I know exactly what's going on.
This also sort of this Russia umbrella includes this revelation that Donald Trump Jr. met with a Russian lawyer who had damaging information on Hillary Clinton after learning Russia wanted to help Trump win. This is reported by the New York Times, and sort of the Washington Post does one of those, well, hey, they said this and we're going to write about it too, but remember they said it first. So, you know, it's like we're not trying, you know, we're going to blame them just in case anything goes wrong with this. But to our recovering attorney, Chelsea, I told you the next question was for you. There's this idea that, well, is that collusion? Now, of course, if that is collusion, collusion is not against the law, but conspiracy is. That's as far as my Judge Judy law degree goes, so I'm not even sure if I'm right. So I'm going to go to you and tell me, could it be collusion? Could it be conspiracy? Could it be something else? And if so, what happens?
Well, it could be either one. I mean, it's very strange that Don Jr. could say that he was meeting with Russia for any real reasonable reason, because at the time Trump was just a candidate. There'd be no reason to meet about policy or,
I mean, not about policy, but
Syria or something. that just, so
look, maybe you want to open a golf course in the Ukraine and you want to see what the ramifications are politically, so you sit down with, so I don't know why you sit down with a lawyer or a recovering lawyer. It's just a theory I'm putting out there.
So what happens is it all depends on if Trump, now President Trump, knew. So they asked
if he knew that Donald Jr. took this meeting for this reason,
right?
At that moment. Okay.
I wasn't alive then, but apparently the big question in the Nixon day was what did the president know and when? And that is a relevant question again today.
You were not alive, but by the way, happy birthday, Chelsea.
Happy birthday.
That's the important thing to get to, really. That's really what the show's about. So it's interesting. What did he know and when? And that's why this ongoing investigation would... Because if it's nothing and never, it's like, all right, so you're going to crucify Donald Trump Jr., so I guess you could have a headline that said Donald Trump, something happened to him. But at the same time, we don't really know. I'll just speak personally. I think that no one in the Trump family or inner circle actively conspired to do anything, especially election fraud. Now, it's possible that, you know, they get in a room, some information, and they're like, oh, okay, I'm going to put you guys in touch with some people. You know, I think that that's possible.
That's not the same thing as colluding.
I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't think that the guy himself actually...
Is collusion by ignorance any lesser of a crime than collusion?
Probably, honestly. I'm gonna bet it is.
But it also goes
if you're just like, oh, you guys should talk. I don't know. You guys like Gorky Park? Yeah, they're great. Go ahead and listen to the CD. I'm gonna leave the room.
It goes back to something that James Clapper said a few weeks ago, which was some people don't know how far down the rabbit hole they are into treason.
Yeah.
Until they're down that rabbit hole. And, you know, even so today, which was really crazy to me, like, even though I could I tweeted out earlier, like, the Trumps are like the people that you really hate, but you feel sorry for them because they're so stupid. And then you're just like, and they're like Kardashians, where you're like, we kind of like you, but not really. But we really hate you. But you can't be that dumb, like with Rob Kardashian and Jeb Bike China last week. You know, and you're like, why would you do that? So this morning, you know, I wrote to work and I said, self.
Did you say this out loud?
I did. I said this out loud.
Okay, I just want to picture it.
I was listening to Pod Saves America, and I was on the way, and I was listening. I said, self, what if these emails that the New York Times keeps claiming about are doctored somehow? Like, what if, you know, somebody's pulling another rug underneath the New York Times' leg, and then the New York Times get the Trump administration comes out and they say, psych, you don't know, these are not authenticated emails, somebody wrote these and you guys are all gullible, and this is the reality of the situation. And then, like us, like God coming out of the sky, Donald John Jr. says, New York Times, I'm going to beat you to the punch. It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Trump Report. Here are the actual emails. And then in the subject line, it says, Russia Clinton -private and confidential. And you're like, Well, guess they couldn't be made up emails because mm-hmm. Don Jr. said it. Definitely mm-hmm. not about a golf course. Definitely know, about. And then they tried to. Cover
do we
it up
know that there's no town in Russia called Clinton? I want to have alternative theories, and we'll get to alternative news in a moment and alternative facts and fake news. But that's all in the future. Back to Buddy. As you hear about various, you know, people and you know connections, which. I'm just talking about them in terms of questions about it. I don't know that we have, you know, smoking guns and, you know, ironclad facts. There's a lot of questions. There are definitely things that you hear like, well, that doesn't add up, right? As you hear those things, do you feel like we should know more? And I'm not even saying anybody's guilty of anything. Do you feel like it's worth pursuing things like this in particular, Don?
Absolutely. Jr.? I mean, I think that's Bob Mueller, right? That's the whole point of the special investigation. Yes. You know, so, yeah, I think that... But we were talking about the rabbit hole. Jexel, who said the rabbit hole? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rabbit hole. It's also
James Clapper said it. I just repeated it.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I'm just saying, like, you're right. So, you know, you have the him tweeting his own emails. But there is also what's called Fusion GPS. And they're also being investigated by the FBI in their efforts and somehow being connected to the lawyer. I can't say her name. Right, the lawyer who he met with.
The Russian lawyer. Talk, yes. The one that Russia pretended like mm-hmm. they didn't know.
Yeah, and they started talking about the Magnitsky Act and all this. So I think the more it's kind of like, I said this on one of my shows with my co-host, I said, a lot of these things, you just got to wait a week and just more comes out. So
no, that's definitely true.
So yeah, so
wherever you stand on any of these issues.
I mean, he definitely, obviously met with her. I mean, that's a fact.
Right.
It's a fact that also, but there's also this thing with the Fusion GPS, which is this
I don't know what that is. That sounds like a fruity iced tea that you would get.
Yeah,
you know? I don't. What is Fusion?
That's something I just literally ran upon when I was sitting out here waiting for you guys. So there's stuff with them and their interactions with Donald Trump Jr. And then also they went and got dirt on Mitt Romney, I think, back in the day. So the issue is that he met with her, I guess, for 20 minutes. That's what they're saying. The meeting was about... the Magnitsky Act, and there was this guy Sergei Magnitsky who was killed.
Right.
He was in custody for 385 days, and he was killed. And so, I guess you, in 2012, you were no longer allowed to adopt. Americans were no longer allowed to adopt babies from mm-hmm. Russia.
Right. I do remember that happening.
So like you said, so there's a lot of things that are going to be investigated. So I guess that's a long-winded...
A lot of that, by the way, makes me feel like, I think I missed a season of House of Cards. Because it all sounds like that sort of, those kind of machinations.
But you know how to handle that differently?
Frank Underwood?
Claire Underwood.
Yeah. She would.
Claire would have handled that a little differently.
No, would have had that paper trail right there.
To be fair, Frank is the OG here. Frank's the OG. Kill somebody.
Yeah, she would have deleted all those emails.
That's why I kind of said, okay, I can't, you know, that
but was... But the Minsky, like first of all, Donald...
Am I saying the right Minsky?
Minsky, whatever the act is, the Minsky...
Yeah, they were talking about how that's why they met originally was for the adoption
stuff.
But then
you're like, the reason they wanted to meet on that is because of the sanctions that the United States had put on Russia. So obviously the meeting was not about the act itself, but was about what was connected to the act, which were the sanctions that the Obama administration had already put on Russia at the time, and the fact that we had... You know, decided that Americans just couldn't adopt Russians.
Yeah, and I think the Minsky Act also was. It's not just about. It's also about banking and visas, and you know, there's all these other
sanctions things, that the United States have put on Russia. Like, but Donald John Jr. was on Hannity tonight,
mm-hmm.
and he said, honestly, my takeaway when all of this was going on is that someone has information on our opponent. Now, every Republican operative has come out today and been like, "Well, we would just have never done it like that." Like what? First of all, Donald John Jr. was not an advisor to the campaign. So why was he meeting about campaign matters? Why was a Russian lawyer not talking to a campaign and not to state about something that was very important to the economic stability of Russia at the time or what the relationship? Why weren't they going to state? So then you're like, then he says things are going a million miles per hour again. And hey, wait a minute. I hear about all these things, but maybe this is something I should hear him out. So why? Why do you...
There is no legitimate reason.
Right, there isn't. He's trying
no
to...
No reason. And I told Chelsea...
To find out.
And I told Chelsea before the show started, I said, I feel like Don Jr. really just wanted to make Daddy happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, Tiffany was the child that they didn't really think of, but really didn't think of Don Jr. either because Eric was smarter. But then everybody liked Ivanka better. So then, like, Don Jr. was, like, the black sheep of the child because he wasn't that bright. So then he
Are
thought
you
he
sure could... you're not talking about the Kardashians? You made that comparison.
I'm talking about... Well, those comparisons are pretty equal.
Well, it's what it sounded like. Yeah.
Because we just talked about the T-shirts. And then 2 days later, Rob comes out with
that's
all
right. Yeah. We need to talk about that when Drexel was on the Tomorrow Show. Just yeah.
And I think, like, and I think the opposition, like you said, the opposition research was like that is that's prob that from what I gathered this early, like said, right. this early, like 2 weeks. That's probably where when he's saying he would have done it differently, that is exactly what he did wrong. Was as a candidate, he's trying to get ahead of the game somehow. And like, so once again, that's just.
But do you know what you do in those instances? You go to the FBI, just like the Gore campaign did, just like other campaigns would have done. You go to the FBI and be like, listen, these people are coming at us. When the Gore campaign got the Bush playbook, the debate playbook, they went directly to the FBI. That's what grown-ups do. They go to the FBI and they say these people are coming
after
us.
But the last thing you'd want to do is go to a foreign national, you know, you do not want to mix that because that's where you start, like you're saying, going down the rabbit hole. That's where you start getting into the treason territory when a foreign country is now affecting, you know, the oppo research that you're
but
talking
you know
about.
I think
you wouldn't want to go that route, and that's the thing where you'd want to steer clear. And that's on either side. Right. People are not going to want to go to another country and start dealing with those foreign nationals supplying you with so-called damaging research for your opponent.
Especially
because
when you don't represent.
Exactly. You have
States.
No. It's a very bad slippery slope. And as we've said since the beginning, you know, we're finding more of these things coming out. It's just that drip, drip, drip. And we know that obviously there was some involvement, but to what degree by the president, by other senior officials in his inner circle is like where is that line? And that's what we're having to find out now. But we're starting to see that it's very close.
I'd
to
be
him.
Interested to know. Who takes the fall for all this? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, like we know, like I'm with Christian. Like I just don't think. I think that they are shielding. If you saw the White House's statement about Don Jr. today, if you saw the way that Don Jr. just fell on the sword tonight, mm-hmm. where he was just like, "Yeah, I probably could have done that a little bit differently." Like he knows he messed up, so he knows something might be coming. Michael Flynn's back there being like, "I just want immunity. I don't care what I say."
Well, to go back to my open, if they could make it work, if they could. Pin it on one guy, Chris Christie. That's who they
right. That's the thing. I mean, and then you have Kushner.
He's on vacation.
Yeah.
He's on a beach vacation.
What, they tear down that bridge.
By the way, if anybody wants to see something enjoyable, look for the YouTube clip of Chris Christie on filling in for Mike Francesa.
Yes, that was actually.
And the
fun.
Caller.
The
who,
caller.
You know, really gave it to him, mm-hmm. and you know that guy wanted to be vice president. But anyway, one of the one of the sort of prevailing topics in this White House has been fake news, and I think that legitimate news agencies have, on occasion, as we've talked about on the show, hurt themselves by rushing to reporting mm-hmm. that wasn't properly vetted. We've talked about that, I think,
right.
as recently, well, not last week, but last episode, mm-hmm. and that really doesn't help your cause that you're not biased, that it's not fake news. And I do think that there is fake news out there. But I don't think that any time that there is a negative news story of some kind, that's like, oh, automatically it's fake news. But that's kind of what you tend to hear from the White House. And I wanted to let Buddy have a moment to – what's your thoughts on the idea of fake news? Is it fake, and how prevalent do you
Man,
think
look,
it is?
I think I'm just pumping my show up and something. I'm just kidding. Your show's great. No, I mean, you know, like
– And your show is the Great American Podcast.
Yeah, man.
GreatAmericanPodcast.us.
Yeah, yeah. You know, look, I think that maybe the label in itself, just calling it fake news, kind of creates a – I don't know what would be a not a barrier, but I'm just saying the label itself. I think people can rush sometimes and they get information and report it, but I don't know how much of a big deal it is. If it's true, if it's true, if it's fake, if it's fake. And if, and I guess, the you know, like I said, fake news now has become a thing and we attack people with it.
Yeah, so. I mean, the biggest proponents of fake news are us, and I don't mean us here in the room. I mean we, the people who, like, on Facebook see this, oh, this link that I haven't really even read the whole thing,
yeah.
that supports a point that I feel very strongly about, so let me just go ahead and share it with everyone
yeah.
without even really paying attention. You know, if it's, you know, Occupy Democrats, or that's the only one I can remember. You know, they have certain names where on both sides where you're like, should I really share that? Right. But right away. And so I see both sides of this on my feed. And I think that there is some fake news out there, but the it's so prevalent, I think. That word might be prevalent, but that's up to you. It is prevalent, sorry. And I think it's mostly because of us. We do only have a few more minutes, so I do want to rush into something else. It's healthcare, and the Republicans are supposedly going to take one last shot at Obamacare. Supposedly, Mitch McConnell does not have the votes to pass the bill, but he's really pushing to try and get a vote next week. We've talked about this a number of times. It's sort of looking for short answers because we only have a few minutes. Scott, do you think he's going to be able to find the votes to get this bill passed? Now, obviously, if extensive changes are made in the next couple of weeks, that's a different question. But the way it is now, do you think the votes are out there?
Not in its present form, because, again, we have too many different factions in the Republican Party, like we've talked about. There's too many people that say it doesn't go far enough, and then you've got the people like the Susan Collins and the Lisa Murkowskis and the Rob Portmans that are going to be feeling like, okay, well, we're going to start affecting our constituents with Medicaid coverage in states that are a little more purple. And so he's not going to be able to get the votes that he wants now. He's pushing the recess in August, a traditional recess, to hopefully get a vote before they go on break in August. But, you know, it's looking unlikely. They're making some tweaks, and they're going to have a new CBO score out, I think, sometime next week on the latest tweaks, and then we'll see how it goes out, you know, nationally, and how people are feeling after that.
And then the final point, and we'll let everyone kind of weigh in on this. House Republicans, they're ready to help President Trump by letting him put a down payment on the wall. They've matched the administration's request for $1.6 billion for the next fiscal year to start building the wall for Mexico. And I think every estimate shows that that would not get much of the wall built at all. So is this something that you think, Drexel, I'll start with you, that Republicans are really going to be willing to go to the mat for and risk a government shutdown for this $1.6 billion for the wall?
I don't think so. I think that there are a lot of southern border Republicans who are grappling with the fact that they're fiscally conservative and they don't care for the $1.6 billion. They'd much rather it not be spent at all. And then you've got border border representatives who are like, this is going to affect our economy on the border, so they're not going to be for that either. So they're trying to figure out how they tell their constituents. It's all about messaging. How do you tell your constituents that you're not going to give the president what he campaigned on, while at the same time explaining to them that it's going to affect their like? The question for southern voters is, do I care more about security, or do I care more about my economic stability? And so that is going to have to be the question for the message that Republicans take back to their constituents, because I don't have the answer for that, because that's going to be up to them. But on the healthcare thing, at the same time, that's another thing. McConnell can either try to appease Collins, who's basically said no at this point. Like, she's not voting for this. You know, a couple
people. And Dean Heller. I meant to include him, too,
Dean Heller may or may not vote for that, but we'll see if they give him something. But it's the conservative wing that you start to see these people attached to the Cruz side of the bill, where you're like, so really, McConnell really wants the conservatives to lock themselves in. So let's give Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and those guys everything that they want. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. But I don't think the board to your point, if the wall is only going to be built like halfway, I don't think the Republicans are going to go for that.
Keeping in mind, we only have about 1 minute, but I do want to let Buddy just sort of, I'll give you a minute and a half if I need to. This is probably one of the most divisive issues as it pertains to President Trump, is the wall. And also, we were talking a lot about health care. Do you feel like, if those don't get accomplished, is that going to be a major setback for President Trump being able to get any kind of agenda going, because he's so heavily banking on these two issues?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. If you ran on that and you said, you know, to the people who voted for you, and, you know, you don't come through. Absolutely. You know, I mean, that's part of the reason that he got elected. You know, so people said, okay, you know, you're gonna new sheriff in town. You asked for us to give you a chance. We gave you a chance. So, if Congress absolutely does not, go forth on health care, which I agree with him, it's not in its present form. It won't, because of the different wings within the conservative movement. And then, as far as the wall, same thing.
Well, and I would also add with the wall, it's not actually going to be a real wall. And it, and John Kelly, you know, Homeland Security Chief, has actually said it's mainly fences and other things they're doing. So I think we almost have to change the verbiage of saying it's not actually going to be a real wall anyways, and it never was, and Mexico's never going to pay for it. So it's like, to keep it going is kind of so. And actually, I would say there's the, you know, the signs that, that we had in the state of California about the immigrants running across the freeways, which used to be a very big thing about 20 years ago. And because it's gone down so much more, there's only one sign left remaining in the state, and once that goes away, it will not be replaced. Just to tell you how the immigration has shifted and changed.
Chelsea, I wanted to give you, do you have something that you want to close on, or do you feel it? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I've told you, but I'm going to be in D.C. next week.
Oh, you didn't tell us.
And I was considering going on Sunday instead of Monday, because there's going to be a sit-in on Monday at the Capitol.
So you could get arrested again.
Please come back.
I considered it, but I'm a little bit worried about my TSA pre-check, and I don't think healthcare, this is going to go through anyway, so I'm not sure it's worth it. But it should be a really interesting week, and I'll report back when I get home.
In 2 weeks. Well, we look forward to that. Special huge thanks to our guest, Buddy Sostan, at Buddy Sostan, buddy.sostan.com, and, of course, the greatamericanpodcast.us. We look forward to having you back sometime soon, Buddy. It was great having you join us. Me, Christian Blatt at Christian DMZ, Drexel Hurd at Drexel Hurd, Chelsea Galicia at Chelsea Galicia.
Somebody asked if it was my birthday. It was Friday.
At Scott Moore, at X-Man Andy. We'll be back next Tuesday. Chelsea won't be here, but our friend Brooke Salise will be back. So we will see you next Tuesday. Thanks, everybody.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos,
the views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.